You know, I was just thinking, I just thought I would record my thoughts, just rambling thoughts going on, because I went back the other day. I was looking for music to do my intro and exit for Burn the Boats Baby podcast, for this podcast. And I remembered the music that I had purchased a license for one of my videos during my Restrain No More. And it was Women in Politics, What a Mix. And it was one of my Jackie videos. And it was one of the funnest videos I had ever done. It was just a blast. Anyway, so I was like, that would be fun music, because it's kind of fun and rocking, and it's called Frat Party, right? And it's fun, and it's rocking, and it's not too serious, and it's not too hard, and it's just fun. And so anyway, I went back to go look at those videos, or go find the video and listen to the song. And so I was watching the video, and went, damn, this was really good. This was funny. And, you know, this is 15 years ago when I did that show, right? And I started thinking, how the hell did I put this together? I mean, you know, because I wrote it, I directed it, I shot it, I did everything, costumed it, all of it, right? And I did all of that. And it brought me back to thinking about my first one-person show, which is what these are called, on stage. It's called a one-person show, where it's one person on stage performing, and, you know, obviously it's called a one-person show, right? Okay, so I did my first one-person show in college, because in order to graduate, I had to do a one-person show. That was my thesis. And so, and I had to write it, and I had to direct it, and I had to light it, design it, and I had to find my crew, find my lighting design, or lighting person, and my sound person, and all of that. It had to be done. It was monumental. I mean, you know, be in college and do that. And it was a really huge, I'll be honest with you. Okay, I'm going to be straight. When I was in my senior year of college, I was so freaked out about doing my worm person show. I was like, I don't think I can do it. I mean, I don't have a freaking clue. And I had to perform on stage by myself for 45 minutes, right? And I'd write the whole thing. And I was like so freaked out that I was going to quit school. I had gone through 7 years of school, and it took me 7 years to get a four-year degree because I had had two children while in college. So I go through 7 years of school, I get to my graduating thesis, and I'm like, I think I'll quit. And then I smacked myself upside the head and said, no, you're not going to quit. You're not going to let fear run you. Are you kidding? You're going to do this. My God, girl, step up. So anyway, but I seriously was considering, I was shaking in my boots. Anyway, but I did it. And I mean, it wasn't even the graduation. I couldn't have cared that. What I was so proud of myself on is not only did I do all of that and create it all, right? It was good. It was actually really, really good. And it got a standing ovation. And it was like, wow, for the life of me, I can't find that script anywhere. I'm so angry, because I thought, you know, that was a really good script. And really what it was on, it was really my life, you know. You know, you write about what you know, right? But what it was is about being a young mom, because I was. My first one I had just turned 22. He was born in June, and my 22nd birthday was in May. And then my second child, my daughter, was at 27, I can't remember, I'm gonna go back and look. So I was a pretty young mom. I mean, in today's standards, right? Back in my day, women were having kids younger. But, you know, what was considered younger. But still, you know, young. And it was really a story about how, as a mom, being a young mom, and also finding myself as a, you know, growing up, really, becoming a woman, as well as raising children, right? And it was really good and really well written. And for the life of me, I don't know where that script went to. Now, thankfully, I have like the video, the VHS. no stuff. I'm telling you, VHS, baby. And so I have the video, because this was like, what, in 96, I think? Yeah. And so I have the video, but of course I have to find a VHS player. Although I do think they have don't they still have like the video to DVD conversion companies that do that? I don't know. Anyway, so I was thinking about, okay, how did I do that? Because I thought, I know that the process was the same. And I thought, well, I didn't just sit down and write, because that's not how I work. I improv, like I would have a recorder, a little cassette recorder. We didn't have our cell phones then, but a little cassette recorder, and I would set up the stage, like what I would think I would be doing, and I would improv the scene I was working on, right? I had an outline, so to speak, right, what I wanted to do, and then I would improv it. And this is the same way I did my dancing, too. I was very good at improvisation. In fact, I appreciated and loved improv so much more than I loved choreography, set choreography. Side note, just about that. I mean, I remember when I was a student, and I, you know, the teachers would teach choreography, and I always really hated dancing with the chorus or the group, not because I wanted to stand out, but because I never. Oh, it was so hard when the music hit me. It was so hard to stay on point. So when I had a solo performance, I loved it so much better, because what honestly happened, and I didn't mean for it to happen, I truly didn't go out going, I'm going to do my own thing. It just happened. It just did. I don't know why, but I would go through all the choreography, learn all the choreography, do all the thing, and then I would get there on stage, and the music would be going, I'd be under the lights, and the music, I know this sounds so cheesy, I guess, but it's the truth. I'm just speaking truth here. The music would just grab me. I know, cheesy, right? But it would. And then I would just be, I would improv. It's like the steps just left my mind, and the music just swept me away. And literally, I was just improvising the whole thing, and it was different every night. And eventually, the choreographer would be just like, you know, whatever, it looks great, do your thing. And I was like, thank you, you know, because I listened to the music, I danced to the theme of what the music was, so all of the stories were still being told within the dance. It's just I improvised it. And so, needless to say, when I was in a chorus type situation, it was always a lot more difficult for me, only because I had to be in line. I had to be in unison with the dancers, and I had to remember my steps. Or I shouldn't say I have to remember. I remembered them, but I had to be very strict with myself. But man, get me on stage alone, and I'm off, baby. I'm doing it. I'm doing my thing. Anyway, so when I would write my own acting skits, you know, I would have an idea, I'd have a beginning and an end, and I'd have an image of what I wanted. So I'm going back in my mind thinking how I did this. Excuse me. I get so dry doing these podcasts. So, and then, but I recorded it. And after I recorded it, you know, and I would record it and improv it. And then after I did that, I'd go home and I'd list it. And then I'd transcribe it, right? And I would do that for every scene. And then once I had it, then I would put it together for the whole production. And that's how I would write my, you know, skits, my plays. Well, in this case, it was a 45-minute play. So when I got to Restrain No More, I'm starting to think, how did I do it? Because, man, I really were good. I mean, and this was back in the Obama years, right? So, I mean, the camera I had certainly wasn't as high def as it is now, right? So it's a little, you know, you could tell it's a little old. But it was like, how did I create these videos? Because it took me usually a month, because I was costuming it and writing it and doing all these things, and I was a one-man crew, right? And my husband, I shouldn't say that. My husband helped me do some editing, so that's not true. But how did I do it? Like, how did I get the music right with the right, you know, scene? And everything was just timed precisely. I was pretty impressed with myself for, you know, an amateur, you know, filmmaker, so to speak. Okay, so because I had just left Hollywood. I was like, no, I'm not playing this game. And I said, I can't do this. Hollywood just wasn't my thing. And now I'm very glad. Hearing all the stuff that's come out, I'm tired of trying to find a beeping me out. So I'm trying to beep my own self out. So beep. Seeing all the crap that has come out of Hollywood now, you know, I'm so thankful. That was one dream. I was very thankful. It didn't come true. But I left Hollywood. You know, I was working in Hollywood. And I was like, it just wasn't my game. I mean, I just, the whole networking and the whole parties and the whole having to put on a happy face when I didn't feel like, I'm not playing this game. And I'm not one to want to be told what to do. So it was just, a director would make a decision. I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's a really good decision. Anyway, and then yes, the whole, you know, sexualization and the whole, even back, you know, the whole just leftist thing. And anyway, it was just, I was done. And so I decided, screw it, I'm doing my own thing. And that's when I started Restrain No More, because I was tired of being silent. Because back then, I mean, it's not as bad now, but back then, man, if you were a conservative in Hollywood, you were blacklisted. I mean, it was like being a communist back in the day. If they found out you were a communist, you were blacklisted in Hollywood, right? It's the same thing, man. You could not, there was no way you could ever admit, and you had to stay in the closet. You had to be a closet conservative if you worked in Hollywood. So when I left Hollywood, because I was just so done with the leftists, you know, thinking there. When I left Hollywood, I was like, I'm just doing my own thing. And so I went into politics. And so that's when I started Restrain No More show. You know, side note on that. So when I did Restrain No More show, I also did collaborate. There was a group in LA called PJTV. They're no longer there, but they were a great little political news show. Kind of one of the first like new media internet news outlets, so to speak, right? And I did some collaboration with them, worked with Pat Boone, which was a blast. That was fun. And then worked with a fellow actor, Alfonso, such a great dude, a great musician. And we did some work together as well. Anyway, Alfonso was part of a secret society. It was actually a secret group for closeted conservatives in Hollywood. And these were like serious names. I mean, I'm not going to name, well, you know them now because they're conservative, but you know them now because everybody's pretty much come out of the closet. Well, I don't know if everybody else, but most people, a lot of people have, I should say. But I mean, these had the big names. These had folks like Clint Eastwood and Gary Sinise and big Ted Nugent, big names in the Hollywood music and music industries, okay? And I think it's okay to say those names because you all know they're conservatives. So, you know, but it was at that time, man, it was secret. There was, you had to like know the whole secret handshake and everything to get into the club. I'm joking a little bit, but yeah, it was pretty intense. And so I got invited because of my work. And, but you know, it was so sad because there were all sorts of people there, not just performers, not just the talent, so to speak, but a lot of the quote unquote techies, you know, and that's a lovingly word. They usually don't like hearing it, but people that work the backstage, directors of photography, lighting people, sound people, you know, the people that make it happen, right? I mean, without them, you have no show, right? And so, you know, they were having to stay silent. And having to just, you know, so this group was really an outlet for conservatives in Hollywood to get together and speak. And anyway, but it was very, very secretive because people wanted to work. People had families. People needed the jobs. Of course they did, you know, and it wasn't like it is now where there are conservative outlets where people can work. I mean, it's still not enough, but, you know, people are no longer hiding, you know, under a bush. Okay. So anyway, so. Okay, back to this. So that was just a little side story. So back to the Restrain No More. It's like, how did I do this? Because this was actually really good for such a novice, you know? And so I did the same thing. I remember I had an idea, something sparked, right? Something, intuition, God, whatever you want to call it, you know, would give me an idea and I would go with it, or something, you know, that it was an Obama story or whatever. And, you know, I would pray like, oh my gosh, I know it would take me a little longer to write this thing up and direct it and perform it. Hopefully it wasn't an old story by then, but usually I try to keep it very, that it would be able to be timeless, you know, of course, during that time of Obama, right? Not less than timeless. Although some of it's pretty timeless today because we all think that Obama's behind the scenes. But anyway, so I remember recording into the, doing the same thing, getting an idea, thinking it, you know, and speaking it out loud, speaking the dialogue out loud, then recording it and then writing it down. And, you know, because the thing is that the reason why I don't write first is what, I mean, because when you write, it's very different than when you speak. I mean, it really is. Even when I write, it's like I will write and I will use words and I will flow and I'll go, but I don't speak that way. You know, your writing could be very eloquent with, you know, like all these words, these $10 words and, but I don't speak that way. Right. Or if I'm reading and I'm reading and I'm writing, I'm going, it just needs another beat. That sentence doesn't quite flow well. It needs one more syllable. What word needs to go in there to kind of just let that flow? You know, there's a rhythm to to writing. There's a rhythm to speaking, but there's a rhythm to writing. And, you know, so you, I don't know, when I write very different. And not when I blog, I guess, but when I'm writing something, I write very different than when I speak, right? I think we all do. I don't know. Well, I think so. So, you know, I didn't want to write. I wanted to speak it so it really made it sound natural and really, you know, made it sound, you know, didn't sound scripted, okay? And so I would speak it and then I would script it. Once I had it in recording, then I would do that. Okay, so that's how I wrote my skits. And then, of course, choosing music and then editing the music to fit with whatever I wanted to fit with. And I'm thinking exactly the women in politics video. And, you know, I was like, damn, I really timed that music nicely to the comedic skit portion of it at the end. The timing was really, really right on. I was just really impressed with myself. Anyway, because I'm thinking, man, if I start doing that again, right? Because, like, you know, I told you, I said, I want to start dancing and getting back into my professional level of dancing again. And I'm not interested in dancing or acting or doing anything for anyone else. You know, that time of my life is over. That, when I left Hollywood, I was done. I want to, you know, be independent and do my own thing. So, and I don't know where I want to take it, but we'll see. But I thought, if I start doing it, how did I do it? And so now I'm just going through the thoughts and the contemplation of what I did. And it was a big project. And I think that's one of the reasons why I stopped doing it. And you know, I mean, I was one of the very first political, there were a few of us that were all out. I mean, we're not talking the big names. I mean, you had the Glenn Beck and you had Rush still at the time, Michael Savage. But, you know, I think it was Steven Crowder. It was Alfonso and I. We were kind of the first real internet political shows before, like, Daily Wire, before all of the what you have now you have. We were, this is back in 2008. You know, there wasn't a lot of, you know, political conservatives with shows at that time on YouTube or that, you know, that weren't the big names. So, and, you know, I did it for about a year, 2008, maybe 2009, and then I stopped. And I think the reason why I stopped, looking back on it, I'm like, you know, it was fun. I mean, performing it was great. I mean, it was fun. Designing it, you know, directing it, you know, placing the music, all of that. I mean, that was a blast, right? And I love comedy. It was fun, all right? And I, as I said before, the characters were big and they were bold and Jackie and Nurse Betty. I mean, and it was just a blast. Or Frau. I mean, just fun, right? But the content wasn't fun. The topics weren't fun. And I realized that, you know, in order for me to write it, I had to be in the news all the time. I had to be up what was current and what was, you know, what was happening on a daily basis. And I was just, it was just too much. It was too heavy. It was just so heavy. And I was just like, and I would get so pissed off. And I think that don't need to beep that. So I would just get so pissed at what was happening in the world. You know, I would just get so angry. And I didn't want to be in that place anymore. I didn't want to be angry, you know, all the time, right? But I would get angry. And of course, I would turn that frustration and just even sometimes just the tears, like, what the heck is happening in the world? Well, today, so much worse, but, you know, back then even, and, you know, and all of that emotion, you know, I put into comedy, which isn't rare. I mean, a lot of comedians, how they work through their pain, how they work through depression, how they work through, you know, even drug abuse or anything like that, they use comedy. And so that's what I did. I didn't want to take it too seriously, although it was very serious when I was in the middle of it, researching it, reading it, and staying on top of what was happening. And I realized, yeah, you know, I don't want to be in this place anymore. I love the writing and the performing and doing all of that. I love it. And here's the thing. I didn't do lots of cuts. I'm a stage actress, right? So as a stage actress, You know, I didn't do a lot of cuts, right? As stage actors, you do a 2-minute monologue. You do a 2-minute monologue. There's no, you know, ooh, I screwed that line up, let's cut, right? Or whatever. You know, you didn't do that. You just did it. And because I was trained as a stage actress first, my skits, even if they were 3-4 minutes long, man, they were done in one shot. They were not cut like they do today. Everybody cuts, right, back and forth. And it was like, it was one shot. It was, you know, it was not easy. I mean, but I'm like, damn, that was good. So anyway, you know, it's nice to take pride in your work. So, but, and, there we go. Got all the words in there. So, but, and. Because it was just too dark, and I was just, it would put me in a place, and I had young kids, and I didn't want to be in this frustrated place, you know. And I was like, you know, I'm done. And so I stepped away from that, and that's when I decided, well, I hadn't quite decided what I wanted to do then, but then after that, I decided I'll open up the performing arts school, because obviously, you know, a performer I will always be. It's in my soul, it's in my spirit, it's who I am. It's just part of who I am. I can't say it's who I am, but it certainly is strong partly of who I am. And it's part of the giftings that God has given me. And so that's why I moved on to Studio Charisse, Creative and Performing Arts Academy. And that's what's brought me here today. Well, who knows where God's going to take me next, but I do miss performing. I do miss writing and putting skits together, and I do miss characters, and I do miss all of that. So anyway, contemplating all this, I don't know, I thought I'd just share this with you. Who knows why? Maybe to contemplate, I don't know, let's just see, maybe to contemplate what your next steps are, or looking back, can you see something and be in awe of how you made that happen? You know, actually, here we go. I think now I have the point of what I want to get to, maybe. You know, sometimes it's very hard when we're hitting a rough spot in our lives to think that we'll ever get through it. Or, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this, right? This is so hard. You know, something hard that we're tackling. And we think to ourselves, how am I ever going to do this? This is so difficult. And then, like me being in college going, you know, this is too difficult. I'm just going to quit, right? 7 years, done. No. But when we do get to those places where things are new, things are challenging, things are scary, it's true, and we just want to maybe run. And that is a good time to look back and remember what you've succeeded at. Remember what you've achieved. Remember how scared you were when you were doing it, and yet you still did it. And you damn did good. You did good, girl. You did good. Be proud. And now you know that you can hit those challenging things. You can meet them head on. And you can remember those times. You can get that feeling of, wow, I succeeded. I succeeded something I was super scared to do, and I did it. And you can take that feeling and take that memory into what you are being challenged with today and take that into it and move forward, right? Commit to that path of doing what you're so scared to do, remembering how you succeeded in the past. So maybe that's why I brought this up. So maybe, and I remember I did this both with my own children and also with my kids in my performing arts school. It was called an I Can box. I can, like. And I would have them write little pieces of notes. This is when my kids were little. This is 20, you know, my youngest is 23. So this is, you know, back 2017, 18, 19, 20 years ago. And then, of course, you know, up until, you know, 5 years ago. So I would have them write down all the things that they knew how to do, that they didn't know how to do before. And just put it in a piece and put it in a box, a shoebox they could decorate, or in a jar that they could decorate. And they would say, I can do blank, whatever it is. And anything they can do, you know, from, well, I can walk, I can time, and you can do this with young children as well. I mean, young, like, you know, I mean, even if they draw pictures, what can you do? And they draw a picture of a shoe, meaning I can tie my shoes, or I can, you know, whatever it is, I can walk, whatever, you know, I can run, I can jump. But when they learn something new, they write it in on a piece of paper. Well, adults do this too. We can do this too. I do this with my clients too. What is it that you can do that you were so scared to do before, you couldn't do before, and now you can do? And you write it down and you stick it in somewhere where you can grab it whenever you need it. And then when you get to a time or a place where you are feeling challenged and feeling scared and feeling like you want to quit, you open up that can-do box or that can-do jar and you pull out a piece of paper. And you look at that paper and you remember, wow, I did this. I did this. I remember how scared I was and I did it. How did I do it? I don't know, but I did it. And I may not know how I'm going to do what I got to do next, but I know now I can do it. And you remind yourself, you can do all things. You got this. Come on, sweetheart. You got this. You got this. All right. I'm out of here. I've got to go get my car cleaned. Yes, my road is so dusty. Every day I have to take I have a Tesla. I told Michael, I said, get me a truck. I want a Dodge truck with big, big tall wheels. Because every time I leave my property, my car is dusty. I look like it just went through the Sahara. All right, be well. Be out of here. Do a can-do box. Just remember what you've succeeded at. When you need those reminders and when you're challenged today. All right, not necessarily today, but in your life now. Okay, bye-bye. Gotta go.